Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
If you were listening to last Thursday and Friday's show, you'll know I was talking to a number of different parents, to Paula, Jane and Angela, who got in touch to tell us about their own children, some of them adult children, their battle with an eating disorder.
She's turned into adult services since turning 16 this year, but just briefly, she was diagnosed in May of 2024. And so since then, we've had 8 admissions to Crumlin Hospital, 2 to Lindara Inpatient Unit, 2 to St John of God's, 1 to Tala Adult Services, and she's currently actually inpatient in another adult hospital as we speak for medical stabilisation and NG feeding.
Our daughter is 14. She's been engaged with CAMHS for the past 4.5 years on mental health support. She suffers with depression and anxiety. I noticed a change in her behaviour around food, that she was restricting. I noticed she was losing a bit of weight, and I flagged it with her CAMHS team. And it's basically been ignored.
Yeah, so if you want to listen back to Jane and Angela and Paula, those podcasts are on the News Talk and the Go Loud app. You can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live. Many other listeners, though, getting in touch with us, wanting to talk about the level of services or the lack thereof for people living with an eating disorder. Linda Duffy is with me here in studio today. Linda's a licensed rapid transformational therapy practitioner. Linda, you might just explain what that is, first of all.
Sure. So a rapid transformational therapist effectively means we use cognitive behavioural therapy, which most people would know as talk therapy, hypnotherapy and neuroscience, which essentially is rewiring your neural pathways. And I help people access their subconscious mind, which holds all of our emotional triggers, our habits and our emotional responses, so that they can understand perhaps, some of the negative habits that they have, or maybe the negative self-beliefs or the challenges they have, maybe around anxiety or low mood or depression or any kind of like challenges that we have, so that they can improve their overall well-being.
You spend your professional career helping others through therapy. I suppose your background to that, though, is that you're somebody who has previous experience of eating disorders as well. Can you share that story with us, Linda?
Yeah, so my previous background was actually in recruitment up until 4 years ago. And I had developed an eating disorder at around the age of 16, but at the time I wasn't aware that it was disordered eating. And when I got into college, I had started to kind of understand that my patterns around food were not normal. And through that period, I started doing therapy. And then I was kind of in and out of therapy for years. Yeah. A lot of the time, sometimes wanting to be there, then other times just not wanting to be there and just maybe going through the process. And then 4 years ago, I randomly came across rapid transformational therapy. And after one 90-minute session, I stopped binging. So as a result of that, I decided that I wanted to become a therapist, and I trained to be a therapist, and I left my job in recruitment and started working in therapy.
When you say you noticed your own, you know, behaviour and attitudes towards food, how that maybe differed from other people when you were in college, can you maybe just, you know, explain that to us, or what did you notice? Because I'm just thinking, you know, for other parents and people listening to you today on the show, it might be something that they can identify with.
Yeah, so I suppose the first thing that I noticed was, and this is obviously my own personal journey, yeah. I'd start eating in secret. So maybe taking particularly sweet food, so biscuits, sweets, chocolates, something like that, I would eat in secret. The second thing I started doing was I was tracking my calories, but significantly reducing them also. I'd noticed that I'd lie about skipping meals. So right. If I was maybe going home, I'd pretend I had lunch or I had dinner, or if I was going out with friends, I'd pretend I'd eaten earlier, things like that. Again, sometimes in relationships, I'd hide what I was eating, pretend I'd eaten, because a lot of us is done in secrecy. Personally, I had binge eating disorder, so I was very good at kind of managing my weight. So I might overeat and binge and then restrict. So it's a little bit harder when you've binge eating disorder to notice if someone's weight is either fluctuating, whether it's getting really low or really high. It can be a little bit harder to spot the signs. Mood-wise, you can become very isolated. You'll isolate yourself a lot. So you might notice a mood change in people. and just around food patterns, even if you just notice somebody having food, they might play with their food a lot, or they might eat their food very quickly, or they might, you might notice them maybe going to the bathroom after they've eaten and things like that. So they would be the typical things that you might notice.
And would your family or friends have picked up on this through college?
No.
No. So it was well hidden.
Exactly that. So we're very good at hiding the patterns and hiding the behaviours. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that is, probably not that an ideal way to kind of go about it is we're so maybe afraid of judgment, or we're afraid of maybe people talking about us or noticing our eating patterns when we do expose what we're going through, that a lot of the time, I know myself and even clients that I work with, we're not too quick to open up about it because we are afraid of, you know, what happens if I tell people.
Yeah. Okay. And when did you decide to talk about this and get treatment for it, Linda?
So I had been doing therapy over the years, but I suppose essentially when I actually opened up and explained what was happening, it was when I overcame my own journey and I decided to become a therapist. And I suppose there's still so much stigma around, I suppose, mental health in general, but particularly around eating disorders, that I just thought, you know, why not? If I can use my voice to explain my story and it's going to help other people, and particularly as somebody who has overcome it and are now helping people overcome it, I just thought, what a great platform to try and share awareness, because and when I did, I got so many messages from people resonating, and God, like so many people had said, I feel like I'm reading about myself or listening about myself, because I didn't care, I suppose, really about sharing kind of the darker side of it, like what we actually do when we're in the depths of, it's a very lonely place. It can be a very lonely place.
Do you know, one of the things I think that has struck a lot of our listeners when we heard from Angela and Jane and Paula last Thursday and Friday is around the services and the available services that are out there. And actually, you know, how difficult it can be to access services when you come forward and are diagnosed and are trying to get help for an eating disorder.
100%. I mean, if you've only three adult beds in the whole of Ireland, it's extremely challenging. And if you're not in the Dublin area, it's even more challenging. I think the waiting lists are anywhere between, it's up to 26 weeks sometimes for initial assessment. And I think resources are a major problem. Infrastructure is a major problem, but also having specialist therapists or clinicians to kind of deal with eating disorders. It's not a generic mental health disorder. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of factors that you had to kind of have to deep dive into to understand what's essentially at the core of it. But it's the lack of resources that are preventing people from coming forward. Because when you have, particularly if you have long waiting lists, you know, that's an initial deterrent for you to make go forward, because you're going to thinking, well, I'm going to be waiting so long. And the other point is that sometimes when you do get into the system, you might be speaking to one therapist today and another therapist mm-hmm. next week, and you have to explain your story over and over again. That it just puts people off. And finances is another one. If you can't afford to go private, again, that's going to delay your recovery.
How financially difficult, you know, it is to even be able to afford help in the first place. There's a listener who's got in touch today, Linda, and they're wondering, because I think maybe from listening to you and the little clip we played earlier, there's somebody in their life who is dealing with this, and they're looking for kind of tips around trying to get a better understanding of eating disorders, the language that they should or shouldn't use. Mm. How would you advise that person?
So first of all, I would say do your due diligence. There's lots of information online on eating disorders. To try and just be mindful of what language you're using around food at the home place. So try not refer to, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I'm having a good week now, and that means healthy. Try not refer to food as good or bad, because that's how we see food. As somebody who has challenges around food, we see it as good or bad. Try not put too much pressure. A lot of the time, people who have disordered eating, they're maybe not ready to maybe even admit that they have a challenge with it. So try not put too much pressure on them to maybe seek help. If they are open to talking, just listen, you know, try not come from a place of non-judgment. Mm. And any information that you can pass, depending on the age of the child, you know, whether that's leaflets, whether it's links to online community services, whether it's sharing recovery stories from people maybe that they might admire online, yeah. things like that.
Yeah,
but essentially, it's just listening and to practice patience, because anybody who has an eating disorder, we don't want to have it. It's not something that we actively choose, and it's not just a case of it's not just about the food, and it's not about body image, and it's not about dieting. So try not just focus too much on that food aspect, because typically eating disorders are a coping strategy.
Okay. There's a listener looking for a little bit of advice as well. They say that they are somebody who binge eats, and they talk about their weight and how that has fluctuated. But they're, you know, similar to this, my weight has fluctuated by about maybe 20 kilograms because of binge eating. I know I need help. What kind of help might help me though? Or what kind of advice would you have for them?
Yeah, so it depends on maybe what they've already tried. So I would say, look, a lot of therapy, unfortunately, is trial and error. So there's a couple of factors. There's the different type of therapies, and so again, that comes down to due diligence to know what's out there. Connecting with the right therapist is very important. You have to gel with your therapist. You have to feel safe to talk to them. For me, and where I have most success with my clients is getting to the root cause of why are you doing it in the first place. So none of us are born with having an eating disorder. None of us are born with addictions, essentially. So getting to the root cause of what's actually fueling this. Why am I using food as a coping strategy? Because that's what it is. So if you can kind of get to the root cause of what's at the core of it, that for some people is enough to actually have that switch in their mind that they actually stop doing it. And because sometimes it's the lack of knowledge. And a lot of the time, eating disorders, they're down to self-belief. So if we think maybe we're not good enough, or that we're not worthy, or we're not lovable, or we're under high stress, high overwhelm, and we feel like we can't cope with what's going on around us, or we've no control over what's going on around us, we will turn to food because it's our comfort, it's our temporary relief, and it's always reliable.
I think the thing I've learned over the last couple of days and talking to people around this is that, you know, we wrongly just associate eating disorders as being people's relationship with food and what they consume, and there's so many other strands to it.
No, it's never about the food. Yeah. You know, it's not... most of us are very well versed on what nutritious food is, you know, calories, things like that. Again, it's not about the food. It's not about dieting. It's not about a body image. It's a psychological disorder.
Linda, thanks a million for coming in to share your story with us today. As I mentioned, you are working with people now that are, you know, that are obviously dealing with this, and people can contact you, I'm sure, via online as well. You're available there.
Sure. Yeah, they can contact me via my website or online on Instagram.
Good stuff. Linda Duffy, licensed rapid transitional therapy practitioner. Linda, thanks a million for joining us here on the programme today.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.